the first time I asked her to tell me a joke, it didn't, it really didn't say anything funny. It was like random. But then I say, tell me a joke that you wrote. And it said, why was the Windows cold? No, why was the computer cold? Because it left, I fucked the joke up. Why was the computer cold? Because it left its windows open. I was like, oh, that's a good one. And then I asked it, well, why isn't AI funny? And it says, AI will never truly be funny because humor is a human thing that requires the complexities and nuances of a human being and its emotions.
Yeah.
And as AI, we're very linear.
Yeah.
Where you input, output. There's no complexity or sloppiness to what we put out, right? That we can't play with a thought. We either have to say something factual or something that you input that we were programmed to output.
Mic check.
I'm good.
Mic check.
You can read about success all day long, but if you don't put in the work, the mindset, execution, and the hustle behind your vision, it just remains a dream.
When everything goes wrong, you have to take all the responsibility.
We uncover what high-level entrepreneurs, business owners do to rise up from hustling daily.
So do what you feel passionate about. Take chances.
The world becomes your library to help you to become better at your craft.
Join me as I share with you actionable tips to help you grow your business, learn skills, and help you level up in your self-development journey.
Your number one spot for business and personal growth is the Online Hustlers Podcast with your host, Esteban Andrade. Every day I'm hustling.
I feel like if you have Miami comedy and you have this going on, and you want your purpose is also part of your purpose is people to really essentially like get to know their city and love it and like see it in different contexts, and also whoever comes in outside, foreigner of Miami, associating with those influencer brand pages, just doing like some sort of influencer shout outs in that page. It's gonna help you a lot. I think it's gonna.
I haven't done that yet. I mean, some people
do some sort of collabs.
Some people would reach out to me like, "Hey, can I post this?" Like, yeah, post it. I'm not against it. I just haven't done it because I don't know how that world works. I know a lot of people do it, where it's like, "This is funny. Let me get as many pages as possible," and they would reach out and be, "Hey, what are your rates or whatever?" When it comes to touching upon this world of collaboration with other people so that they can promote you, what you're doing is, the way I see it is, you push your content through someone else's community, and that can benefit you. But if 100% of your community is your own, you kind of get a better understanding on who they are, rather than like a bunch of people all at once coming into your community. And then you're like, okay, now what's the, do you just know me as this joke? Because that's kind of like one of the pitfalls of being an online comedian, where it's like, if someone shares a joke of yours and it goes viral, for example, and then they come follow you, so you get like 100 followers, new followers from a joke that you wrote, they want you to keep doing that joke. Oh yeah, do that joke again about the thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no, I don't want to put myself in a hole. Then I'm leaving. This guy's not, he was funny once, not anymore. This guy's not doing the same thing. So I can see myself when I do a joke and it goes very well, I'm very cautious about not being a one-trick pony. I mean, it's nothing wrong with that. I'm coming off like a jerk right now. There's nothing wrong with being a comedian known for one thing. We were just talking about niching. That's a good thing. It's just, I'll give you an example. I do this thing called when a person from Miami goes out of town.
Yeah.
And that stuff went viral. And then I got a lot of followers. And then I don't want to be the guy doing that only. I want to write one-liners, and I want to do podcasting, and I want to do other stuff. You know, that's how I would feel more fulfilled. So I'm speaking for myself here, not generally. You got to be careful about the pitfall, though, because if you brand yourself as a particular kind of comedian, especially on the niched online world, you got to go all out and just be that thing.
Yeah, because I've seen many different type of. So do you know Andres Lopez, Colombian comedian? He used to have La Pelota de Letras.
Yeah, I think my friend Oscar, we did a tour called Hilarious.
Big Belly.
Colombian Americans.
Big Belly.
He told me about it, yeah.
Eye bags. Anyways.
Sounds familiar.
So that guy got really popular through a season. But you're right about that. Like, got really popular through a season where he launched basically like two or three tours in like less than 5 years. And he did really well. He went all around the US, all around Canada, all around Colombia. Obviously, he's Colombian. And he did really well. But then he kind of died off after the first 5 years, I would say, like 3-5 years. So I guess those are the risks that you're talking about, that people will just know you about this particular show, this particular joke. Mm-hmm.
You have to, as an artist, I think it's very difficult, but it's a sound decision to want to evolve. I mean, think about one hit wonders and think about icons in music, for example. The one hit wonder got that one hit and they never evolved. They kind of like try to do a cookie cutter approach again. While the more iconic ones were always experimenting with their sound. Like Michael Jackson went through like a bunch of phases. Prince, you know, Prince would play his own instruments. He would get better at those instruments. He would bring other musicians to play with him. So as a comedian, I think it's a tightrope walk to balance being what you're known for and also changing and evolving what it is that you're known for.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you bring people along rather than coming to the people all the time. But that can be difficult.
But you know who I learned from that are artists that teach me marketing, proper marketing? Because if you think about it, Bad Bunny, he's not the best singer ever. However, or Starbucks is not the best coffee. McDonald's is not the best freaking burger, right? However, they understand three things real well. Especially Bad Bunny, for example, how he crushed 2022, right? They understand their audience really good. You mentioned about your audience, right? So their users, the audience, people that see them. Two, they know how to properly follow trends. So you talk about changing, evolving. So trends, whatever is happening, for example, like he's able to keep happy Gen Z and Gen X, Gen Y, right? He's able to keep happy these people, but following trends as well. And obviously keeping innovating. Like those are the things that, for example, Bad Bunny does really well.
Bad Bunny has evolved. I mean, I've been following him for a while.
Yeah.
I like him because he helps me understand the Latina better. And they're very complex creatures.
Oh my God, dude.
So I listen to Bad Bunny. I listen to the lyrics like, oh, that's what they like. They like toxic guys. Great, great. All right, you got to take them all to VIP, and then you can cheat. Got it. And I'm here learning like the subtle language of the beast we have to tame here in Miami called the Latina.
Dude, talk to me more about that. So anyone that comes to Miami, whether that's to purchase real estate, whether that's to do business, do some vacation, what do they have to learn about Miami Latinas?
About Miami Latinas?
Yes.
Oh, man. So people all over the world can come to Miami and see like top A1 Wagyu beef of Latinas here in the city. That's what's great about Miami. Like it attracts and filters out the rest. You get like the really good prime cut here. You know, Latinas have a rhythm of life. And you have to know that rhythm, whether it's through dancing, your skills in the bedroom, your spending habits. There's a vibe. There's a thing going on where you got to like catch up. And then if you do, it's almost like riding a bull. You know, when the guy's riding the bull, he's got to hang in there and it's like kicking him around. Well, a Latina does that in many different forms of life, financially, spiritually, mentally, physically. And you got to hang in there. And you got to make sure that you go with those rhythms and not get thrown off. And then eventually the Latino will be like, you know what? I got to give this guy some booty. He's doing a great job handling me. That's how you get a Latino.
Oh, man. A lot of white males come from the North, travel here.
I know.
Find a Latina. But they also go to Colombia.
And then I go to the Midwest trying to get with their women. It's weird. It's like a trade-off. It's like I go to like places like, you know, was Cincinnati, and they're like, oh man, you got Latinas all over Miami. Like, I'm trying to get to your redheads. You guys got redheads? I haven't seen any redheads in Miami since forever. You know, Asians are second. There's hardly any Asians in Miami.
Yeah, and that's weird. Asians are everywhere.
In Miami?
Everyone in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, like if you go to San Diego or New York.
I came from Toronto. It's so diverse.
Toronto has Asians?
So many. You got Filipinos, you got Chinese, you got Japanese. But here, where?
That's what I'm saying. People come into Miami to get with the Latinas, and then the guys leave Miami to get, you know, out there, try to bring the Latino vibe to their city. So is dating, you know? That's what it's all about, just switching it up, wanting something different.
Yeah. I've met several New Yorkers or Californians that they not only come here to increase the freaking rent everywhere because it's a deal for them.
Oh, you're upset because that's what you do. You're in real estate and you're mad at the New Yorkers.
But they come in here with their partner, like with their girlfriend or her wife. They just come in here because like they have a girlfriend or wife that is Latina. But at the same time, bro, like I don't know if you ever noticed, New Yorkers and Californians, they just come here and see Miami as a cheap way to live a beautiful life.
Cheap way? In comparison to Cali and New York. Okay, yeah. Well, now it's no longer, we're equals now. You brought up the rent to the point where we're now at your level, California, New York. So thanks for making us the next big popular corner of the United States. So you got the left side, you got the north, and then you got the south. The trifecta is now complete. The most expensive places. And we were last because, you know, Miami time, we were late. Hey, that's a great joke, by the way.
Say it.
We were last, right? New York was big, California was big, and then Miami finally came in being the last trifecta of the most expensive city to live in.
Yeah, it is. Man, in this building, they went up 21%. I know people that went up like 30, 50% their rent. It's freaking crazy, dude.
And they still stick around.
Yeah.
We're holding down the fort here in Miami. We figure it out. We find a way. It's either we ask for a raise, we get a side hustle, or we just start selling drugs. We find a way.
But it's good. It's good for landlords. Well, in terms of, they're bringing in more high quality.
It must be so weird to evict somebody.
I'm going to have a guy that literally just went viral recently in Miami, some Miami Post and also New York Post, where he was calling a tenant saying, hey, I'm the new landlord. And it seems like you've been paying like $1,000 for like so many years, like 10 years, 12 years. We got to raise your rent. So he filmed himself. Again, he used a controversial marketing tactic. He filmed himself calling the homeowner, the renter. Hey, I'm gonna increase it $1,500. And she's like, "What the fuck? I'm gonna call the cops on you, you freaking corn artist!" He's going viral. He's like having like almost 18 million views on TikTok, dude. He's coming here to this podcast. He's a Miami investor. Cuban American, first generation, bro. But it's, you gotta watch it, man. Like, and like I was saying back to this, when you use that type of content, controversial stuff in social media for your brand, because he's trying to brand with other wholesalers and investors, you're gonna make your marketing better. Like whenever you put content and you fuse it with controversial stuff, right? It's
sensationalism.
It's just a booster.
Right. Yeah. It's unfortunate though sometimes because, you know, sensationalism can either misinform a lot of people or just dumb it down. So it's a shame that that's what it takes in order to really stand out.
It is. It is a shame. However, I do want to understand I think comedians need to be amazing copywriters.
For sure. Absolutely. I tell my comedy
friends
all the time.
You guys are the best copywriters.
Yeah. It's like, if you know how to write a punchline, why can't you write a headline? It's the same thing. It's just, you don't have to make them laugh when you do a headline. You just got to hook them in. I did a presentation about that once, where what's the similarities between writing a good headline to hook somebody in and a punchline to make somebody laugh.
Yeah.
And the only thing, the difference is that one makes you click and the other one makes you laugh. Right. But it's still an action. So imagine writing a sentence and then people take action on how good that sentence was written. It's the same skill, just different outcome. But comedians don't want to hear that. You know, they're cynical. What the fuck are you talking about, Manny?
Yeah. As a comedian, the now fused business and marketing, the understanding of it, what's your process now to write?
Copy?
I mean, your scripts and your punchlines.
Oh, ChatGPT. That's how I write. That's how I write my copy now. It's so good.
It is so fucking good.
It's scary. I was just, when I was doing the video sales, I was like coming up with some ideas. It's like an extension of your brain. It's like, hey, I do coaching. Why is it that people, remind me why people like coaching? Coaching? Oh, yeah. Let me say that.
Dude, we're using it like for everything. I'm teaching my team to do it, to help me create copy for emails, create copy for YouTube videos, whatever, ads. But again, it's an extension.
Yeah, you can't rely on it too much because then everything just sounds robotic.
Yeah.
You just need an insight from it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the future of online content.
Everything. Like, yeah. As a comedian, like, how often do you use ChatGPT?
Well, here's the thing. Here's what's great about the era we're about to get into with AI and being accessible to everyone. It still can't tell a good joke. I mean, it's programmed. Some pre-programmed jokes are on there. Like, I asked it to tell me the first time I asked it to tell me a joke, it really didn't say anything funny. It was like random. But then I say, tell me a joke that you wrote. And it said, why was the Windows cold? No, why was the computer cold? Because it left, I fucked the joke up. Why was the computer cold? Because it left its windows open. I was like, oh, that's a good one. And then I asked it, well, why isn't AI funny? And it says AI will never truly be funny because humor is a human thing that requires the complexities and nuances of a human being and its emotions.
Yeah.
And as AI, we're very linear.
Yeah.
Where you input, output. There's no complexity or sloppiness to what we put out, right? We can't play with a thought. We either have to say something factual or something that you input that we were programmed to output. And yeah, so I think writing funny will definitely help you stand out with everyone using copywriting from AI and stuff like that. So getting a sense, I thank God I'm in the business I'm in, because having a good sense of humor right now is probably going to be one of the best skills that you can have, especially in the emerging online world that's coming around.
Bro, and any marketing in any business, online business, I try to put sometimes humor into the text follow-ups that I do. Bro, when someone doesn't show up to my appointment, I go like, the first text is like, I know that the best things in life take time. Is that why you didn't show up?
Yeah.
And then the next
one. That's great. I love that.
And then sometimes people laugh and sometimes they be like, lol.
Yeah.
LOL, whatever.
Yeah, they were rude, but that's okay.
Yeah, but anyways, but...
You didn't take it to heart.
And then the next one is, I hope nothing happened to you. You're not in the hospital or something. Are you okay? Kind of like being worried, sincerely worried. And then after that, I go and send a meme. A meme that makes them laugh. To get, again, trigger them.
You try that hard to bring people out to one of your talks, to one of your appointments?
No, this is for my business, the service.
Right, that's what I mean. Like you go to those lengths to make sure that you do that kind of follow-up?
Thing is that
so if... You do a dramatic, no, you do a funny one, a dramatic one, and then just a regular follow-up.
I mean, you can go as deeper as you can.
Wow. But
yeah, man, like the thing is that when someone, let's say you have an appointment to sell someone in a service, right? Or to help them find a solution. Some people are not going to show up for X or Y reason. You don't know. They could be like non-serious people. They could also be people that are very busy. They could also be people that something happened, like during the field, like they had an accident. They, I don't know, they're running late for some reason. They forgot, right? They didn't mark it in their calendar, like whatever. Mm. So there's still opportunity by following up on no-shows. Like, I'll actually, because the money is in the follow-up usually, and you keep following up, you keep basically retargeting your person until like they actually like say, okay, let's talk and let me watch your content, buy your product, get your service, whatever, after going through the sales process. That's why you got to put a lot of effort into what happens after they've seen you for the first time, or they try to meet you for the first time, which is the follow-up. And that's why we do it. Mm. So that's something huge.
That's great.
Yeah, man.
I'm not really much of a follow-up person. Like, if someone doesn't show up to like a Zoom meeting that we did, I was like, well, I guess they died.
Yeah.
And then I just move on.
Bro, tell ChatGPT, like, this guy probably died. Tell me a sequence of
follow-ups.
That follow-up that shows that I'm worried that he fucking died or she fucking died.
Or they.
And then you just put it into like a system, a CRM, be like, okay, just put it.
All right.
Yeah, man, this was great.
How long have we been going on?
1 hour.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm glad we ended on the note to show people just how knowledgeable you are in what you do. Because I love being a comedian, the odd thing about where I'm at in my life is like, I don't like the spotlight too much on me. I kind of like working in the background. It's like I write a joke and I just post it.
But today was your spotlight.
I know, you gave it to me. I appreciate
it. Before you go, so did you know that you can actually, because you were talking about ChatGPT AI to be a better comedian copywriter. Did you know they can teach ChatGPT to think and to have the same comedy language as the best comedians in the world? And then use their comedy.
Pre-program it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, pre-program it, like teach them and give them context. Okay, you learn from this guy. Learn from Andrew Schulz. Mm-hmm. Learn from, I don't know, tell me.
Bill Burr.
Yeah. All right. So if you were to tell ChatGPT to learn from the best comedians and give you a copy, spit you a, some sort of like writing script that is unique, mm-hmm. what are the list of best comedians that you'll tell ChatGPT to use?
What I would put in?
Yeah.
So Bill Burr, Patrice O'Neill, Jim Norton, Mark Normand, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, Dangerfield, Kinison, Eddie Murphy, Dave Chappelle. That's 10. That's good.
Yeah. I was low-key just trying to have a new list of comedians to watch.
So, Bill Burr, have you gotten into him?
No, man.
All right, you got to watch
Bill. I got to watch him.
He's so good. He's so good and authentic. He's the reason I did stand-up. I was following him since 06.